This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever you're celebrating during the holidays. We hope you're having a good one, and we hope you're spending it with friends and or family. I'm spending it with my family here on the show. My co-hosts, Richard and Brian. How we doing, boys? Happy holidays. It's super warm outside, though, in Texas. Does not feel much like Christmas. It's not beginning to look a lot like Christmas here.
Had lunch on a patio today.
Yes, I just returned home from the rooftop cinema club, nice. Which is completely outdoor and all that, and like didn't even have a jacket. So that's what you want, you know.
I had the first of many office holiday parties today, and it was, of course, ugly Christmas sweater, and just dying. Just literally, I mean, it was like 90 degrees.
Hottest, today. Yeah.
It was so miserable. And I even got like, mine was more of like a hoodie because I was like, if I'm going to spend $30 on something, I'm at least going to get something that breathes a little bit. It wasn't a terrible sweater. And even still, was just dying. Just too hot. It's too hot for this kind of stuff.
What theme was your Christmas sweater?
It was Gremlins, actually.
Oh.
I just went on Amazon. I was like, I'm just looking. Will probably come as no surprise to you guys. I don't enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah, not a dress-up guy.
Yeah, not a dress-up guy. So
see
I'm always
those hands?
Gonna go,
they don't dress up.
That's right. I'm always going to go t-shirt, if that's possible. This one needed
Brian's
something
big book
sweater.
Face energy.
Yeah.
Big gym book face energy from Brian. Yeah.
Yeah. Did I send you guys a picture of my office door? I don't think I did. We were highly encouraged to participate in an office and or cubicle decorating contest, which also not my cup of tea really. But so I did the Dwight. I did the just straight up it is Christmas on my door. So it's just like that's fine. That took me 3 minutes and that's all the effort that I really want to put into this. And people will laugh. It's not that funny, but people will laugh, you know? So that's good. That's all I really needed.
That's awesome. You know, this is gonna be a Christmas themed episode. Lots of Christmas movies to talk about. And we've talked Christmas movies in the past on the show in various forms, but we wanted to give you a little 2022 Christmas special of Mad About Movies. So we'll do a few things today. Gremlins will come up in this episode at some point, and we're going to talk about just our current favorite five Christmas movies. For me, it kind of shifts around every year. I don't know about you guys, but my favorite of all time list kind of stays pretty solid. It might change every 5 to 10 years, but I feel like my Christmas movies list changes almost every year, kind of depending on mood. So this might be my 2022 edition. I might have to update this on a future Christmas special here on the show. But my movie opinions kind of shift around when it comes to, I don't know, festive movies, horror movies, kind of things like that that fit outside of the normal, I don't know, zeitgeist of movies, if that makes sense. And it's kind of these subsets of genres that we have. And so, Christmas can go a lot of different ways with it, and they certainly have. And so this will be a really, really fun episode. But I wanted to ask you guys just thoughts on Christmas spirit in general. Brian, you mentioned the door decorating contest. And that's so funny you mentioned that because in our apartment last year, they sent out like a, hey, decorate your door and the winner gets like a free month of rent or, you know, something like that. No one decorated their door.
Oh,
the entire
man.
Complex. I don't think
I'd be worth
and
it.
And they were just like sending
rent.
Out That's, emails constantly saying, just a reminder, this contest is still a thing. If anybody wants to do this, I don't think anyone did.
Literally, so, just one person does this, there's a really good chance you're going to get free rent.
Like, hey, we're trying to make this fun for you guys and doing something festive, but yeah, it doesn't seem like Christmas is nearly as big as it's been. I don't know why that is. Maybe just decorations have cut down. Maybe just people have realized, hey, it's pointless to put these decorations up for 3 weeks and then immediately take them down. So maybe we've just cut back on the amount of Christmas decor in general. But how are you feeling about Christmas these days, Richard?
Well, I mean, I have a newborn, so it's exciting to do his first Christmas. Mm.
What did he ask for?
Just Applebee's gift cards, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a big Kohl's Cash guy, too.
Kohl's Cash guy, yeah. Because those exchange easily for OnlyFans. but the... no, yeah, we're not
a lot of single moms that need Kohl's Cash, so it works out.
it's a better exchange rate than cash. We don't outside decorate much, but we have a big, you guys have been to my house, we have that big like framed window in the front of our house. Mm-hmm. That's like giant, and so we just put our tree right in that, and that kind of serves as both inside and outside decoration.
Yeah,
it's kind of a two birds thing.
I like that. It's very good.
What about you, Brian? How are you guys celebrating this year? And do you look forward to Christmas celebration, or is it kind of a beating?
Yeah, look, I get grouchy about a lot of things, but I really do love Christmas and the celebrations, and I actually really do love Christmas decorations. It's just, it's not a thing that I don't like forced.
Right.
Merriment, I think, is where I kind of draw the line. But yeah, we do the usually the Sunday after Thanksgiving, we do big decorating day and put up trees and hang the ornaments and stuff. And obviously that's a ton of fun with the kid as well. He's still, there's probably another couple years where he's enjoyable in that setting, you know, before he becomes awful like most 12 to 15 year olds are. So yeah, we do a lot of that stuff, and I love it. We watch a lot of Christmas movies and Christmas specials and Christmas TV shows and things like that. I really dig this time of year. I tend to like it more in like the 2 weeks right around Christmas, because this is also like a super busy time work wise for both Lindsay and I and stuff. So it always feels, and her birthday is yesterday, so it always feels like there's so many things we have to rush through in the first two and a half weeks of December, and then hopefully it's chill for the rest of the month after that.
Yeah, same. We always enjoyed Christmas growing up and watching Christmas movies. Going to look at Christmas lights was a big thing in our household. I don't know if you you fellas were ever a, hey, let's all get in the car and go drive around and look at Christmas lights. But that was certainly a thing. In decorating the tree, we actually don't have a Christmas tree this year because we had one and it's a fake tree, and our cat is obsessed with it and like eats the little pine needles off of it, like the plastic things. She's just like getting sick constantly because of it. So yeah, we had to put that on hold to spare the cat from killing herself with toxic fake pine needles, and haven't gotten around to going and chopping down our own tree, strapping it to the car and doing that whole thing. So until we find out a solution, we're like, well, can we put it on top of it? No, she can jump up there. Can we put it here? No, she can get there too. So it's kind of hard with a cat. With a dog, you can kind of maybe put it on something or put it out of their way, but a cat can kind of get everywhere. So it's kind of ruined us having the tree in the house for this year until we figure that out. But, but yeah, always had a real tree growing up. It was always a trek to go do that, Clark Griswold style, and do that. And Christmas movies, fellas, I return to them every year. It's always something I look forward to. I've got a little playlist on my computer of Christmas movies that I add to it. Christmas TV episodes. I think I've shared that with you guys, the playlist for all the Christmas episodes. So
yeah,
it's always fun to go back and watch those and enjoy this time. Want to ask you something maybe controversial, though. Is it okay to watch Christmas movies and or shows not around Christmas time. Is that creepy or weird?
I mean, I don't.
If you're watching the Santa Claus in April, yeah. is that okay?
I think
if you're not a kid,
I think you know. Just I think just do you. Like, how do I you know? Just roll with it. It's fine. Like
you do whatever, you, man. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever brings you joy. I don't know. Like I used like COVID year, we put up our Christmas decorations probably a full month earlier than normal because it was like, why not? There's nothing else going on and things are terrible, so let's just you know let's. This brings a little joy. Let's have a little bit more joy. So if watching Christmas Vacation in June is brings a little joy, then sure. Why not? Go for it. The Christmas music, though, is where my mom was somebody who would listen to Christmas music 12 months out of the year. And that kind of drove me crazy. Like, I can't handle. Yeah. I really, there's like 30 Christmas songs that I think are dope. I don't need any others, and yeah. I don't want them to exist prior to at least like mid-November. I can't do that. But again, if that's what brings you joy, then that's fine. Whatever. But yeah, I don't. That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about that. I feel like if you're a kid, and it's like I love the Grinch, I love Charlie Brown. Let me watch that, mommy. I think I'm fine with that. I don't think there's anything weird, but. Yeah, if you're a full-on adult and alone and you're turning on...
Rocking around the Christmas tree and it's July.
Yeah, it's just to get a little serotonin rush, maybe we need to find alternate methods. If that's the only thing that brings you joy in life is memories of Christmas. Yeah, it's a funny thing because there are so many great Christmas movies, I feel like, but... Not a lot of great new ones. Does that make sense? Doesn't feel like there's Christmas movies that enter the zeitgeist.
Well, the war on Christmas, dude. I mean, we're obviously, been on the front of this.
You know, that's
who we should blame, I guess.
Yeah. You were there, front lines, warring at Christmas. Everyone talks about the Iraq War, but they don't.
That would be a good movie. War on Christmas was just literal war on Christmas.
I'm sure that's been done. Kevin Sorbo. No.
Kevin Sorbo. That was a name pull for you.
That was strong, Ryan. That's exactly who would be in it, too.
Would totally be in,
I don't know. We went and saw Elf tonight with the family for the rooftop cinema experience. And... That came out in what, 2003?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that one feels new. Like it feels like, oh, this is a new Christmas. Doesn't that feel like one of the newer classic ones compared maybe the ones that we always watch in our household? That one feels like the most new, and that's like 20 years old at this point.
I think that there's some nostalgia play on this stuff because of It's a Wonderful Life and maybe a Christmas Story playing on TBS for 24 straight hours and stuff like that. I think that there's a, like with Christmas movies in particular, maybe even more than other genres, it reverts to sort of classicism. I made a new word there. And nostalgia. And it's like, well, we've always watched It's a Wonderful Life. So some of these other movies have a harder time, you know, cracking the list and getting in when you're, whatever, your grandma's in charge of what you watch on Christmas Eve, and it's like, well, it's going to be A Wonderful Life, obviously. I think it's harder for those movies to crack through. I don't know. I think there's been a few additions to the Christmas genre that are pretty dang good, and maybe are modern classics, or will be classics someday. Maybe Coop and his family one day will be like, well, we've never seen It's a Wonderful Life, but we've watched whatever, Elf 1,000 times or some of the other movies that maybe will come up in this conversation.
Yeah, it seems maybe one every 10 years or so kind of sticks around and people kind of constantly talk about it. Elf was certainly the one for around that time. Bad Santa, same year, by the way, as Elf. So 2003... Big year for zeitgeisty Christmas movies, apparently. We're feeling very, very festive then. One of the ones that comes to mind recently is Klaus from Netflix. Did you guys see that one?
I watched that this evening with
Coop. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good timing. Very, very high on my I genuinely I think that might that's be my great. Number one Christmas movie in a couple more viewings. Like a wow. couple yes. more years. I love that movie. It's so pretty and touching and well put together and kind of funny. Love that movie.
It's great. Such a different way to go about it too. It's not mm-hmm. like your standard.
It's definitely Christmas the best tale. One with Will Sasso. Best Christmas movie with Will Sasso.
So far.
Well, we'll maybe get to that, Richard.
Well, is Drop Dead Gorgeous a Christmas movie?
Oh, good question.
Yeah. They are in Minnesota.
The Three Stooges movie. Yeah.
So, great transition. I wanted to ask you guys about what makes a Christmas movie. And here we have, according to the Reddit, the 10 most debatable Christmas movies.
Oh, okay.
So I want you guys to vote. Maybe I'll break the tie if needed on if these are Christmas movies. Number one, from 1984, Brian, you mentioned it, Gremlins. Is it a Christmas movie?
I think that there's a lot of movies that I would categorize as Christmas adjacent. And that would be one of them, but then also I would not put up a fight if we were like, hey, you guys want to watch Gremlins at Christmas or around Christmas? That would be, I think that would be totally acceptable. So I don't know. Like maybe 10 years ago I had like hard opinions on, no, that's not a Christmas movie. And then it felt like everyone had those opinions and I was like, maybe I don't care anymore. I'll say not a Christmas movie, very Christmas adjacent. How about you, Richard?
Yeah, I would say I'm basically the Basketball Hall of Fame on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because just for context, everyone gets into the Basketball Hall of Fame because it's college and pro, not the NBA Hall. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame.
International and everything.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. If you were a good high school player, mm-hmm. You got a shot.
I send in your tape every year, Richard.
Cool. So thank you.
Eventually. Yeah.
But so, yeah, one day I'm kind of like the Drew Pearson of it. and I weep every year. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. on the old Fourth Christian jersey and just have a nice cry.
And I invite Channel 8 to my house and then I just weep when I don't get it. And they go, Mitch Richmond. And I go, are you serious? So anyway, I don't like a lot of Christmas movies that we'll talk about later. So like to have a list of 10, I have to be pretty liberal with what's a Christmas movie. So yeah. If there is a scene where it is Christmas, it is a Christmas movie to me pretty much.
Okay. Wow. That opens up the door. So Gremlins came out in June of 1984. I consider it more summer blockbustery in my mind, like in my mind's eye. I don't associate it with Christmas. I think we did a throwback on it for the VIP in which we, I think, said like, wow, this is a lot more Christmas than I remember it having. Yeah. Maybe it just has that weird ability to kind of shapeshift itself into during Christmas time, it's a Christmas movie. And every other time, if you want to watch it in June to remember those times, great, go for it. And it's still gonna kind of hold up then. Yeah, that one's tough. Gremlins could go either way. I think I probably lean not Christmas movie, but I'm with you, Brian. If you made the argument, I would not hate you. What about Batman Returns?
You go first.
I hadn't thought about that one. I think that one's more of a winter movie.
Okay.
I love that more. I know that violates my there is a scene where it's Christmas, but I guess there's something, right, that I apparently have more of a line than I thought. I won't vote in Roger Clemens. There's a color scheme too. There needs to be some warmth to the like the tone of the movie, and that's a very cold black and white and like white, like gold silver movie color palette.
Mm-hmm. I think I might be discovering that the line for me is less about is it a like true Christmas movie or does it come out around Christmas? Because I don't think movies that come out in June are Christmas movies.
That might be the new qualifier.
I mean, Batman, I have a big spreadsheet, obviously, because I have all these...
decorate his desk at work, but you know, work hours for 6 hours to put that bad boy together.
Just genuinely, seriously, a little inside baseball here. I have to put everybody. Most people know I do youth sports. That's my job. I have to put my basketball league together.
But yeah,
right. To put my basketball league together before Christmas break, but the season doesn't start until like January. But I've got to get all this done. And it is a very time consuming process. It's lots and lots of spreadsheets and writing things down and moving stuff, tons and tons of logistics. And I really like it because it works for my brain, all this kind of stuff. But also, I have to wait forever and ever and ever for all of this information to come in and all these coaches to tell me what days they can practice. And there's so many moving parts. But once my brain starts moving in that direction, I'm literally just sitting, like last week, I had nothing to do except wait. But my brain is already like clicking on that kind of logistical level. So yeah, I did a big Christmas spreadsheet because I was like, I got to do something with this incredible nerd energy. So anyway, both of these movies I had like on the sheet and just listed as Christmas adjacent. So I'm going to say no on this one.
Richard, any thoughts? Other than the color palette, I'm kind of opposite of you though. I feel like it needs to be cold.
Yeah, I like the cold, but I do agree with you, Richard. It's like just having snow does not equate to Christmas.
It's a mid-January movie.
Okay, all right.
It feels too.
Yeah. Okay. A couple others here. Let's see. Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, it is. I don't like it, but yes, it is.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
I have no thoughts on that piece of crap.
I think it's a kind of a transition movie. Like you watch it the day after Halloween, when Halloween's still kind of around, but you're transitioning into.
Yeah, and you put on Christmas. Your black and white weird leggings when you set that weird.
Or you can have Halloween on Christmas if you want.
You could do that. Yeah, play some My Chemical Romance and just have a good old time. Yeah. Cooper really digs that movie, and it's
pretend
one
to
of
like
my greatest
Oingo
Boingo.
That's a theory of mine. No one actually likes Oingo Boingo.
Have you heard about how Henry Selick is like super mad lately that he's not getting credit for that movie, and everyone still thinks it's a Tim Burton movie?
I mean, I would say just be glad no one's blaming you for it personally, but it's like the people that fight over who created The Wave.
Probably the one thing he's done in his career that has any staying power, though, and Tim Burton's like, oh, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I get it.
But meanwhile, Tim Burton's trying to deflect it. He's like, that wasn't me. That was not me. Yeah.
I made Dark Shadows, sir. Yeah. I have standards.
Speaking of Tim Burton, Edward Scissorhands.
Had never thought of this at all as a Christmas movie until like last week when I was looking through stuff. I say no. I don't think so. Put it on the sheet. Christmas adjacent. Fine. That's fine. But I say no.
Okay.
So no for me.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. Does have Christmas scenes in it. A lot of snow, you know, white face paint. Kind of reminds me of Christmas a little bit. It looks very cold, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you guys about this one, though, because I know it could fall either way. Harry Potter series.
I normally, if I'm watching them, and we actually are watching them this year, I watch them like every 2 or 3 years. It normally ends around Christmas, but to me, it's more of a Thanksgiving fall kind of feel. So they're definitely winter movies, but I wouldn't say Christmas. I would say more you started around Thanksgiving and maybe you wrap it around Christmas, but it's not really holiday-ish.
I think the first two could count as Christmas movies.
Yeah.
There's like the Chris
Columbus
scenes.
Effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. they're obviously the most like childlike of the series. I think that there's a childlike quality to Christmas as well. So, I would say sure on the first two. After that, no, not so much. Cause I agree with you, Richard. Like I watch those movies every year, every other year around this time, but I think some of that has to do with like the first few came out around this time of year when they were originally released. I think that's part of it. I know that's the way it is for like Lord of the Rings for me. Lord of the Rings, obviously not Christmassy at all, but I always watch it during this time of year. And I think a big part of it is just they all came out at Christmas for three consecutive years or whatever. So that's just, it's kind of ingrained. And they do have like kind of a winter feel to a lot of those movies. But so yeah, Harry Potter, yes, for the first two, but not after that.
Okay.
Corran kills the Christmas vibe.
Yeah.
That's probably fair, because when I say I rewatch these, I always start with Azkaban.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't really watch the first two very much, so that's probably fair.
Yeah. Where do you land on that, Kent?
It's tough. I'm kind of where I am on Lord of the Rings. Like, I feel like Lord of the Rings is very Christmassy, but it's not really Christmassy. But I always want to watch it around this time of year.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the pine trees. I don't know what it is.
I think they feel wintry. I don't know that I don't think that they're Christmassy, but I think that they're wintry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good. Last one we will discuss here. Die Hard. Yes or no? We've done a full episode on this. If you want to maybe go back, I think it might be on the VIP feed, the full review, but, I think it might be, because the fact that it opens at a Christmas party and it's so overtly Christmassy. It's not like there's one scene that's kind of Christmassy. It's kind of centered around Christmas.
That would be my reasoning as well. I still think of it as action movie. I think it might be the best action movie of all time. But it isn't just like there's a scene where there's Christmas happening or there's, decorations around the office or something like that. Like it is very, Christmas is very central to that whole movie. So, I think that is a fair Christmas movie, more so than most of the rest of these that we brought up.
Yeah, I think so too. The fact that they attack the tower because it's a Christmas party and all that, him half trying to get back to his family for Christmas and all that kind of stuff, man. Yeah, I think there's a better argument for that one than a lot on this list. Speaking of lists, before we get to our top fives here, which we'll rattle off here in just a second, top grossing Christmas films of all time, fellas. This is quite a list. I was actually pretty shocked at how this list has shaped up. And I think this is adjusted for inflation maybe and worldwide gross too. So keep that in mind as I'll rattle off some here. Coming in at number, let's see where I should start. Let's go here. At 17, Jingle All the Way. Made $129 million.
Jingle All the Way.
Slightly ahead of that, Bad Moms Christmas from 2017, 130. Wow. Arthur Christmas. Is this Arthur like the PBS Arthur? Or is it a different Arthur? Let's see. It looks like a different Arthur.
It's a different
Arthur. Is it Dudley Moore?
Yeah.
No,
it's James McAvoy, Bill Nighy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hugh Laurie. Okay, so it's a British property. More of a British property. Four Christmases after that, 2008. Santa Claus 2 in 2002 did pretty well at the box office. $170 million that thing made. I think it made more than the Santa Claus, didn't it? No, Santa Claus is coming up right here. Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Remember how hyped that was? Actually did pretty well. $170 million.
Wow.
It may probably cost $200 million.
I don't know a single person who's ever seen that movie.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if anyone that's maybe seen this one. Daddy's Home 2.
Oh, that's right.
It's not a Christmas movie. Come on.
Well, Mel Gibson's in it, dude. He made Passion of the Christ.
He does love Christmas.
That's what qualifies it there. Yeah. Number 10, The Santa Claus. Okay. $190 million. Classic. 1994. And
weird they waited 8 years for a sequel.
Home Improvement still rolling, so maybe good. I mean, and Toy Story.
I don't think he liked being in the fat suit. I really think that was
I was funny, we were talking about this today. you know, that's a guy, because there's a new like Santa Claus show on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And it's funny, my wife and I were talking about this at lunch. It's like, you know, Tim Allen's made a lot of money between Toy Story and Home Improvement and Last Man Standing and just everything.
Drug deals
and a comedy.
Santa Claus. And it's like, why did he do this? Why did he go put on a fat suit and like commute in for this Disney Plus show, you know?
Because they showed him the money. Probably,
but he's got like $150 million. I don't know. I feel like he's a better person than me, because I'd be
point. It didn't seem like something he would do. Maybe he wants to get back on Disney's good graces because buzz.
Relevancy, and something about that.
I'd be like, I just don't have that gene. I'd be like, unless you're giving me another $150 million, you can find Richard Karn. And he can be
he's like, do I really want to be Santa Claus forever too? Like that's...
Because that's just a lot of prosthetics, and it just seems like, you know what I mean? If you have $20 million, sure. But like, totally. He's got a ton of cash.
Richard and I talk about this a lot because we both read a lot of like scam and heist books and stuff. Like nothing interests me more than a business scam, like Bad Blood or something like that. And I always say, I'm like, I don't think I would ever get caught. A, I don't have a good enough idea, and I probably have too much morals and all that sort of stuff. I also would never get caught if I went down this road, because I would get to like 50 mil and be like, yeah, I'm good. That's enough. I don't need, there's
way beyond
almost
that
every single time. It's not that they get caught because they're doing bad stuff or any of that. It's because they push it too far and the greed gets too, and I'm just like, no, I don't need that level of money. I got retirement money now, baby. That's all I'm looking for. It's exactly. Very similar with the Tim Allen.
Anyway, good for Tim. I actually think that's great. I think people will be entertained by it. It's not a criticism of it. I'm just saying, if I'm him, I'm like, no way.
Yeah, that is odd. I never really thought about why he... I really think it's to get on Disney's good side.
But to what end? What? You know?
Get him another Toy Story and...
Okay. Yeah. So... You know, he's got like four of them and a lot of money. Like, that's my point, is like, why does he care? I'm just saying, I'm impressed that he does. But it's not like it's other than Toy Story, which is, you know, a true art form, but it's not really like his art form. So it's not like he's like gaining. Doesn't seem like you'd get a lot of like, man, we really crushed that.
If someday I have hundreds of millions of dollars and then somebody says, here's 20 more, and I say no, then I'll know why.
That's fair.
You know, but I can imagine it's pretty tempting. I don't know. That's the only conclusion I can come up with. The holiday, my wife cannot stand Home Improvement, by the way. Not that
it's
the funny
really bad.
It's not that she, not that the show is bad necessarily. She can't stand the theme song.
That's the best part.
She literally hates that. Yeah, the grunt thing. She can't do it. She asks me to do it sometimes.
Side to our Santa Claus conversation today, it's funny, like, you know, people kind of forget that show was like every bit as big ratings wise as like Seinfeld and Friends.
Yeah. It's a huge show.
It was a huge show. I mean, it just didn't age well. When you watch it now, the comedy is just not very funny, but that show was such a freaking monster.
Is it on streaming anywhere?
I think it's on Disney Plus.
Is it?
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Nothing is funnier if you can find the clip of the Colbert and Carell and all those guys watching the Dana Carvey trailer about whatever weird thing they were doing, and then it cuts to it, and then an all new Home Improvement.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Cancer. Yes, Hulu. Yeah, yes. That is your son has cancer. Yeah.
And the way they all it's so well made. They just go to all of them just dying. Colbert has to take his glasses off. He's laughing so hard. I don't want to die, Mom. It's literally.
Going, let's see here. We have The Holiday, number 9.
And my wife loves that movie. Not for
mine does too.
They're making another one announced today.
Yeah. I like pretty much everybody in that movie. I don't like that movie.
Here's another one my wife likes, Brian. The Family Stone. Have you seen that one?
I hate that.
Couldn't do it. I had to leave the room. I was like, I can't do this movie.
The Family, that's one of those. It's did you guys see Happiest Season, the Kristen Stewart one that was on Hulu a couple years ago?
No.
Okay. People really like it. It's fine. I'm not yum yucking.
Depressing.
Those two movies are the same into me, because it's like, these people are so terrible to the guests that they have for Christmas. Yes. Like, they're just all terrible.
Imagine having like a Christmas dinner and it going terribly and then making a movie of that.
Yes.
Like, that's the movie. It's so bad. So awkward.
I hate it. Don't like it.
Yes.
Even Rachel McAdams can't make me like that one. Sorry.
Yes. Rare. Then we go to slightly ahead of the holiday is Elf at number 8. I thought that Elf would be higher on this list. I thought it made more money. Still made $225 million in 2003. Probably cost 20 to make. Love Actually ahead of it. Same year. So we had Bad Santa, Love Actually, and Elf all in 2003. Polar Express, 2004.
Hate it.
Creepy.
So weird. Yeah.
Does your kid like it, Brian?
Nope. He's creeped out by
it. Okay. Because like my nieces and nephews love it. And like a lot of kids, it's like a very definitive.
They're almost indoctrinated into it because every daycare, kindergarten, Mother's Day out, whatever, they all do Polar Express Day around like the last day of school before Christmas break. All of them do this. And it's, you know, wear your pajamas and they're going to order pizza. And it's this big thing, this big event. And I think Coop had done that like 3 times. And maybe when he was like 5 or 6, he was just like, Dad, this movie creeps me out. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. I totally understand. Like sort of like saw through the facade of the whole thing, you know, or the pomp and circumstance. But yeah, it's a creepy movie.
That book creeped me out too. Like Ghost Train. Like, what are you guys? I'm not getting on this ghost train. I don't care where it's going. Yeah, it's very, very odd that one has done so well, stuck around so long, and still continues to be a topic of conversation. 2009, speaking of Zemeckis, a lot of people don't even know this happened. Jim Carrey was in Christmas Carol CG Fest in 2009, and that one made more than Polar Express. $320 million.
Gosh.
I don't know what people expected that. It's like, whoa, I've never heard this Christmas Carol story. I wonder what this, like, isn't the most obvious what that's going to be, you know? Like,
yeah, I don't think I'd ever seen that. But maybe last week before, we were surfing through Disney Plus looking for a movie to watch. And Cooper was like, what's this? Like, well, it's Christmas Carol, you know, the whole thing. He's like, yeah, let's give this a try. About 20 minutes in, he was like, Dad, I don't really like this.
I'm good. Okay, cool. I'm still creeped out.
Yep. Let's get out of this. Yeah. Someday I'll show you Back to the Future, and then we'll just pretend like nothing else Robert Zemeckis ever did happened. So,
I'm getting him into Gump.
Love that.
For his 21st birthday, we're hitting the Bubba Gump.
All right. Well, a few more here. Top 4 of all time is, man, number 4 with Jim Carrey. Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, $345 million in 2000. I am guilty. I was so stoked about this.
Me too. And that was the busiest theater I've ever been in, I feel like. I remember that theater. Yes. It was like a 3-story stadium thing, and it was like every 2 people in every seat. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. People were pumped for that movie.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't it? It was Ron Howard, who was kind of flawless track record up to that point as a director. Jim Carrey was coming off the peak of the 90s, and everybody liked the original Grinch. And it's like, man, this is going to be perfect for Jim Carrey. And I think the trailer was really innovative. A lot of big set design. That one has stuck around big time.
Oh,
as a favorite of my little sister's about, I don't know, less than 8 years younger than me. And that's a big one for her group of friends and their generation.
Yeah.
She was born in 96, so
yeah,
it's about that time.
That makes sense. There's worse than that one. I mean, it's very silly, but it's, you know, it's fine. The Grinch rules, just as the character, so.
Yeah. Top 3 here. Number 3, Home Alone 2, $358 million in 92. Number 2, Home Alone, $476 million. In 1990.
Now I'm curious as to what's one.
And number one, any guesses?
Die Hard?
It's not Die Hard.
Christmas Vacation?
Ugh. Christmas Vacation is number 26, actually.
Wow. Okay. Makes sense. 80s didn't make much money.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
It's fairly recent.
Recent Christmas movie. We haven't already hit. Man. Santa Claus 3? I don't know. I'm out of
Santa Claus yes. 3 is number 20. Okay. No. If I feel like if I give you another hint, it'll give it away.
Oh, so. Maybe the Grinch, the animated one? The like not the classic. I mean the yeah. Minion.
The Benedict Cumberbatch Grinch?
Yeah.
Yes, that's number 1.
Okay.
Wow.
500 million.
Coop love.
Made half a bill.
Super is that good?
It's fine.
Brian?
It's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's not.
I need to watch that.
Yeah. You can sit through it.
Okay.
Pretty amazing that made half a billion and they haven't made a sequel in 4 years. I'm sure it's on the way. Baby Grinch.
They're putting minions in it. Yeah. The rise of Grinch.
Yes.
And when Grinch. And it's a combo, Gru and Grinch buddy cop movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
These are all free, folks, over at Illumination or whatever it's called.
Illumination. All right. Let's get to our lists here. I'll go first with my 5 movies on movies that I rewatch every year. Sort of Desert Island Christmas movies. Okay. The ones that I can maybe watch every day around Christmas and kind of have that staying power for me. Because a lot of these... And Elf is one of those I figured out tonight. It's like, yeah, I can watch that once a year, but I don't know if I want to watch Elf again for, I don't know, a couple more months, weeks. I don't know. It might take a while to work myself up to it again, but I really enjoy it every time. So these are the ones for me. Muppet Christmas Carol. I think that one is the definitive Christmas Carol story movie. I don't know. I think it's kind of become that, oddly. Over the years, like as if you want to know that story, just watch the Muppet version of it.
Mm-hmm. And how hard Michael Caine's going.
So much less in so many bigger non-Muppet movies.
I know.
That's what's funny. It's not like he's a guy that's like, you know what? Michael Caine does not phone it in, you know, Muppets are not. It's like, no, he phones it in on most things, but not these Muppets really brought it out of him.
Yeah. John Denver, man. Too.
He's like, I won't get out acted by Grover. Like those old stories, like old Hollywood guys, like being competitive with each other.
That would be so funny. Just huge rivals with Fozzie. And he's like, I'll show him.
Yeah.
I'm doing this movie. Yeah. And I'm going to kill it.
Little tease for the VIP. That'll be our Christmas episode this year.
Yeah, it will.
Muppet Christmas Carol.
So yes.
It's on my list too.
We'll talk about that one more. I'm going to get excited. My next one is, honestly, I need to look up what this one's called. It's the original Grinch, animated one from like the 60s.
On mine too.
Yep. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
30 minutes long. It's perfect.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's not Dr. Seuss's because that's Ron Howard's. It's not the Grinch. It's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Okay.
Yeah.
That one's on my list. Love that one.
Same.
Watch it all the time. Love the animation. Love Dr. Seuss's style of drawing, really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And who would have thought that'd be hard to make into live action, but it certainly is. So like that. So my top three, I guess in no particular order, but the order I'm putting them in here is Charlie Brown Christmas. Love that one too. Love the
classic.
Love the soundtrack to that one more than like the movie. Just like the Vince Guaraldi trio jazz. The whole like Charles Schulz hearing Vince Guaraldi on the radio and being like, oh, that's the sound of Peanuts, you know, making that like the entire aura of that show is such a genius move. And to apply it to Christmas is great. I want to get the record of they released a deluxe version of the album with like a bunch of outtakes, extended takes of that. And I want to hear that, man. That sounds
nice.
That sounds awesome. But great soundtrack. Maybe the best Christmas music, in my opinion, is the way he went about that. So Charlie Brown Christmas is a joy. Super short, super, super good. And then my top two, Home Alone and Home Alone 2. I'm going Home Alone 2 a little bit ahead of that one. That was actually the first Christmas movie my wife wanted to watch this year was Home Alone 2. I was very surprised at that fact, but we did. We watched it the other day, laughed our butts off. So funny. I think the entire bit of John Hughes, like the dialogue for Kevin McAllister is just like an adult's dialogue. Like he doesn't like, okay, a kid is saying this, and that makes it 10 times funnier when Kevin talks great like an point. Adult.
Tim Curry was a great ad too.
Yeah.
As like a secondary villain.
So good.
That really takes it up a notch.
The entire, you were in my hotel room last night bit of, is so well done and so plays out so funny. Every single time I see it, I laugh at, you were smooching with Cliff and he's like, no, janitor guy and all that. Oh man, that is classic. Love that movie. And, I don't know why, but I think maybe it's like the fact that Kevin's a little older.
Yeah.
And maybe a little better actor. Why I like it more. Like he kind of.
And you were saying before we recorded that it's your second favorite Rob Schneider movie behind The Animal.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what you're saying. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's one of your favorite movies. So
The Animal. Oh my gosh.
Right. And the hot chick.
I was going to say white chicks, but that's not.
Yeah. How dare you? Hey. Can't, how dare you?
Put some respect on that.
People worked on those films.
Did they?
That's cinema.
Guess who saw The Animal in theaters? Me and my mom.
Nice.
Man, it was so cool talking to Stern, Daniel Stern, I talked to him a little bit about Home Alone 2. Actually, he mentioned it because I didn't want to be the guy is like mentioning Home Alone when I talked to him about Rookie of the Year. But he mentioned it and he was like, man, he's like the run I went on. He said he had Home Alone, City Slickers, Home Alone 2, City Slickers 2, and then Rookie of the Year, like all in a row.
Legend.
That is an unbelievable.
What a run.
90s run. And he was like, I was in two comedy sequels. He's like, comedy sequels were never made back then. And I was in two of the biggest ones ever, back to back. Like I was doing pretty well. And then that's when he decided I want to direct a movie. And he did Rookie of the Year and had a lot of the people in Home Alone 2 pop up in Rookie of the Year. But man, Home Alone 2, greatness. Love it. But let's go with your five movies, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll go actually in reverse order because it's more interesting. Mine are Home Alone, number one, Home Alone 2, number two. So you and I share that one. Number three, controversial pick, Catch Me If You Can.
Okay.
Nice. I'm going to say that's
a Christmas good one.
Movie. Yeah. That's a Christmas movie to me.
Sure.
I know that the whole thing takes place around Christmas. There's a lot of Christmas scenes in this. It passes the threshold to me.
That's fine.
Comes out at the right time of the year, too.
Yeah. And then I go Die Hard 4, Love Actually 5.
Nice.
And then...
Oh, Elf. I thought you meant Die Hard 4, like Die Hard. Sorry, no. Die Hard 3 or Die Hard.
Big time to the
Elf. I don't know that one's
big. Big just loves anything with Justin Long, really.
Uh-huh. You know that, Ken. The key. Come on.
Yes.
Like Long Nation.
Long how many times has he tried to make
Long
us watch
Strong? Tusk? Yes, exactly. You
know? Long Strong. That's good.
And then, so next is Elf, Muppet Christmas Carol, and then the old school animated Grinch. That was mine. And then every other Christmas movie is bad.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But is that bad? Is that a bad thing? Like, is a bad Christmas movie better than like?
Nope. They make me viscerally uncomfortable.
Okay.
The worst.
I'm kind of where I am with horror movies. I'm like, I think a bad horror movie is better than, you know, it's like, it's honestly hard to make a bad horror movie. It's kind of hard to make a bad Christmas movie.
Cringe so much. Cringe so much more at, A Christmas Story than Ari Aster.
Well, you're not alone there.
God, I hate the Christmas Story so much.
I do too. Yeah. Yeah. That's the worst. It's the worst. There's a lot of other ones that I can tolerate. I can watch every once in a while. Christmas Vacation is one of those, like a lot of people really love it. If that's the movie that gets put on at a, you know, some Christmas party or whatever, I'm like, that's fine. I can handle it. I'm not going to choose to watch it.
I love it. I'll choose. I'll be the guy on the pod that likes it.
Yeah. No, I'm of a lot of these movies, that one, I will, a little bit of that with that, for me, with that one is just how many times I've it's been put on in that setting. Like, okay, mm-hmm. we're watching this again. All right, awesome. Christmas Story, I can't. Like, I would rather just claw my own eyes out. I can't handle it. It's so bad. So bad.
Yeah, that one did not hold up well on the rewatch for me. But yeah. What are your movies, Brian?
Let me give you one that hasn't been mentioned yet that's not Christmassy, but is sort of like Christmas adjacent, and then I'll give you the six that we watch for sure every year, I think, in this. Christmas adjacent is Little Women, the Greta Gerwig version. Love that. Feels very Christmassy.
Yeah, that's that great kind of scene a cool with, pick. That's cool.
Yeah, that great scene with Odenkirk when he walks in at Christmas. Yeah. Awesome. But also it just feels Christmassy and winter and stuff. I kind of like rom-coms during this time of year. I think winter in general is a good time for the rom-com or the chick flick or whatever you want to call it. So these are the six movies
that's the most defensive thing to call them, and I just think that we're on a podcast because that would have made you guys laugh.
Just Texas. These are the six that I think we watch every year in this house, in some order. Elf, haven't watched it yet this year, but we definitely will. Always a fun one. I think kind of modern classic. Does get a little old, I'll be honest. Like, there's times where I'm like, oh, okay. It could definitely become Christmas Vacation for me at some point in the future where I'm like,
I don't know.
All right, that's enough. I've seen that one enough. But still really dig it. The OG Santa Claus, great. I actually think it's better as I get older.
That should go on my list. That's a good movie.
Yeah, that's a classic one. Also, we recorded an episode on that during Kent's bachelor party. So
there's I forgot.
There's a little inside
guys
baseball.
Being dudes, just broing out hard.
I was broing out with the Santa Claus. We're going to talk about Muppet Christmas in a couple weeks. That is a Muppet Christmas Carol. That's a big time classic in this household. And then... talked about Klaus for a second. Watch that tonight. That's just such a beautiful, awesome movie. Makes me just borderline weep pretty much every time I've watched it so far. And I really do think, I think there's a chance that could be my number one favorite Christmas movie at some point in the future. It's just only been out for like 3 years. So, another one that came out in 2019 around that same time is Noel, I think is super cute and just is the right, it's not great, it's not like, it's a little bit cheesy, it's all of these things, but it has kind of the right vibe for, that tends to be the one we watch when it's like Christmas decorating night. I don't know why necessarily, but it does.
And you wouldn't think it would work, but like, to cast Noel Gallagher in that was...
He does a great job. He really does.
Noel
he really
Gallagher.
Embodies Santa so well.
Just embodies
super cussy
the Christmas
Santa,
spirit.
But yeah, it's good. It's good. Number one for me is Home Alone. That's the kind of the standard for Christmas movies in this house.
And movies in general.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why is it in Home Alone, in both of them, this happens in both, when they go actually find Kevin at the end, it's only the mom. Are they like, all right, you go ahead, honey. We'll stay back here. We gotta take care of this hotel room. A lot of things more important than our missing son right now. So you go ahead.
Yeah.
And the funniest is that she, in the first one.
Peter's running his drug empire, dude. He can't.
He is loaded. And the funniest is in the first one when she has to ride in the thing with John Candy and is going through the airport and she beats them home by literally 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. That should be a line. It's the one quarrel I have with her. She has all that. And I know she misses her son and she's just happy to be home and it's Christmas, but there's no way if you just did all that and then you beat everyone by 2 minutes that you don't go, are you effing kidding me? To the, yeah. Right. There's just no way. I was with the Polka Bros. One guy pooped in the corner because we couldn't stop, and you guys got business class seats, and I beat you by 2 minutes.
Gosh, it just never occurred. And I thought that was only in the first one, and then in the second one, it's the solo mom like running down the street of New York to go find her kid. You go ahead, honey.
John Candy's so great in that too. Gosh,
I like Rob Fee's theory of the uncle was the one that set all this up. The uncle and the dad are like teaming up together to sabotage this kid. Yeah.
It's a classic.
It's good.
I love it.
All right. There's a little movie, or there's a little Christmas movie talk for you. Hope you enjoyed some festive memories of maybe some of your favorite Christmas movies. And I was surprised that that freaking Grinch movie had made so much money.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Just printing money over there, man, at the Minion Factory.
Yeah, they are.
I don't know. Is that what they sound like?
Let's see if they've got Grinch 2 on. No, doesn't look like it. But they do have the Super Mario Brothers movie this year, which is going to make $1 billion. So.
Yeah, it's going to make $1 billion.
And then Despicable Me 4 next 2024.
All right. So we got Movie Draft for Ken.
More Minions. And then in development, untitled Pharrell Williams film.
Sick.
So he'll
it's
be
about his hat.
Doing some more happy themes for everyone. All right. Before we get out of here, let's hit a quick weekly recommend.
Weekly recommends.
Richard, what you got?
Yeah, mine's a good one. We watched with there's a documentary and a book that I'll recommend kind of together with the World Cup going on. It's been a lot of fun. I'm on maternity leave, so I've been watching way too much of it. Netflix has a really great documentary called FIFA Uncovered, which is like a two-part doc series. On kind of how everything came to be in Qatar, and just kind of a modern history of actually a full history of FIFA as well, which is really interesting if you're interested in kind of global geopolitics and sports and all that. And there's also, if you're not a documentary four-part person, you want to audible or read a book, the person I interviewed the most in the doc wrote a book called Fall of the House of FIFA, and his name is David Kahn. So I recommend either one of those, whatever you're, you know, Kent's a documentary guy. Brian and I are normally kind of more book guys, whatever your poison is there. Some context around this great World Cup, which is great, but also kind of dirty and stuff. So it's my rec.
That's good. I watched that series. You're totally right. You had warned me going in, like it's there's a lot of filler, and there is not a lot of focus in that documentary series, but it's really
good. The stuff that's good is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
That yeah, what's the documentary called?
FIFA Uncovered.
Okay, there's one that came out called Kickback too that I was wondering if it was any kind of official documentary, if it was just everybody's making documentaries about this thing now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that Qatar stuff is crazy. I remember seeing the ESPN, I think E60 did a report on it a couple years ago. During the building, and then John Oliver did a big segment.
Yeah,
his last segment of the year was basically like, this whole World Cup is corrupt, but I'm going to watch anyway, which is kind of sad, but it is what it is.
Right,
and
right there with him every morning, first thing I do.
Yeah, so, man, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I'm going to be sad. I got 2 days without it right now. Bummer.
Yeah certainly a topic that makes for interesting documentary content, and I'm going to have to check that out because there's definitely a lot to that story for sure. My recommend is a book I've been reading. It's you might have read it, Richard. I don't know if you have, Brian. It's The Petty Biography by Warren Zanes. Have you read that?
No, I need to. I like that
a lot. Yes.
Because I don't know that much about it.
Love that book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you read it, Brian?
Yes.
Yeah, it was
so good.
Really good. It's called Petty the Biography.
Cool.
And yeah, just his whole life, his upbringing story, and it kind of tells it like it is. It wasn't didn't cut corners with this one. And that's Tom kind of said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it for real, and paired up with him and made this kind of his official signed off on biography. But not too long, really interesting, really good. You would love it, Richard. It's called Petty, the Biography by Warren Zanes. Came out, I think, a few years ago. But yeah. What you got, Brian?
It's one of my favorite music biographies ever. So, and I don't even, I mean, I like Petty fine, but he wasn't, you know, my rock star of choice. But it's really well written and has a lot of the access for that one. I mean, a lot of times those biographies, you know, it's like, it either feels like it's just like regurgitated directly from the mouth of the writer, of the musician, and it's kind of sanitized and whatnot, or it feels unauthorized for a reason, you know? Yeah. It's just like, so it's pretty rare, I think, to get one that's kind of right in the sweet spot. And that one is, gosh, it's, that one's so good. Do you remember, Ken, is the story about him and his coffee machine, is it in the book or was it?
Maybe I haven't gotten there yet. I'm only about halfway through.
Gotcha.
But
I want to say it was something that wasn't actually in the book, but it was from, it was just like an anecdote from that author talked about how Petty was like obsessed with having a great cup of coffee. And I don't know. I'll see if I can find the link and send it to you guys.
It's one really funny cool story that, anecdote, you know, right, that I don't know if it was in the book, or I've been reading a lot of rock and roll literature lately. So maybe it was another one I read about Petty towards the end. He was such a recluse. Like, he either was like, I'm in the studio, I'm on tour, or I'm at home. Like, he would never go out to dinner with you. He would never go do anything. He was just such a, you know, agoraphobic kind of guy. And he moved to LA to this huge farm, like in Malibu, like chicken farm, and had all this land and stuff. And he was living in this huge house by himself. And he said this lady walked up to the door and was like, hey, I'm looking for work. Can I be your cleaning lady? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. I need a cleaning lady. And so she became his cleaning lady as she walked up to the door and was his cleaning lady for about a month. And then he figured out that she was robbing him the whole time.
But he is just the kind of guy he was. He's like, yeah, come on, I'll give you work. You know, I need help. And he's like, he won't come to you, but if you go to him, then he was the nicest guy and was just trying to be nice and got screwed over. And he was like, yeah, I learned not to take people at their word towards the end there, you know, got taken advantage of at the end. But man, whew, died too soon. Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy. Crazy to think Paul McCartney's like 80 and Tom Petty
still having a wonderful Christmas time too.
We still have. Wonderful. He was 66 when he passed. That was very young.
Tough.
All right. What you got, Brian, for a recommend?
You know what? I'll do another musician biography or whatever too. I just finished Surrender by Bono of U2. I did the Audible. I like that because he's reading it. He's got a great voice. I like his voice for reading. And also it's another one similar to like the Brandi Carlile book last year. It has like, if you do the audiobook, you get like musical interludes and things like that, cool, which are kind of cool. It's got some production to it. The book's like on Audible is like 21 hours long. It should probably be like 15 hours long. Like there's some.
That's weird. Cause when I got the Audible app, it just came and it started playing. And I couldn't.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like you get it for free. he does. Yeah. It's, two thirds. Yeah.
About the Apple thing and how he feels bad about it now.
It's in there. Yeah. You know, I will say it's a little bit like their career in that the first two thirds I'm really into and the last third I'm less into.
How's Chapter Couture say?
It's it's fine. But no, like Bono, I think is somebody, I think Bono is somebody who's really easy to make fun of. Sometimes he makes it easy himself, you know, to make fun of it, but he also has a pretty good sense of humor about his whole bit and has a lot more humility, I think, than a lot of other.
His biggest fault is that he's overwhelmingly earnest.
We just
don't know seriously how to handle that as a society.
Seriously. But there are times when the book, like, kind of you feel like it starts to creep into like, well, I got to get this anecdote in about this famous person I met, and a little bit name droppy, but for the most part, it's really well done and gets into some. I mean, they really have had an incredible career and also have interacted with and been involved with like so many of the biggest, most important people on the planet, not just in the entertainment sphere, but in, politics and
religion,
activism and the Dalai Lama. I mean, like everything. And so there's a lot about all that sort of stuff. And he talks at length about like his faith, and he's always been very open about that, but I felt like it was the most open that he's been in a long time. And anyway, it's really,
daughter's pretty hot. Not like talk about that.
The what? Sorry?
His daughter's pretty hot. Does he talk about that?
he doesn't mention that specifically, but maybe in the appendices. Anyway, it's not like an A+ book. I think it could have been early on. I was like, this is a great book, and then it lost steam a little bit as it went. But for the most part, it's really good. And like I said, the audio read is very good too. And I don't think that I don't think you need to be a huge U2 fan to appreciate the book and dig the stories.
Right on. There we go. There's some recommends for you and some movie talk, some Christmas themed movie talk. Hope you enjoyed that. But if you want more from us, we have another feed, a VIP feed. This week, we are talking Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown. 25 years since that movie. So we'll look back and see how it holds up. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP is the place to sign up if you want more from us. And you want to just support the show and want to make sure it keeps going. That's the way to do that. Appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.